Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, June 18th. I'm your host, Stan Jastrzebski. This is Ask the Mayor. We're pleased to be joined this week, as we are every third Wednesday of the month, by Bloomington Mayor Mark Rezaian. Mayor, thanks for being here, as always.
Absolutely. And who again are you?
I'm the new guy. I'm the guy who's not Adam Ragusa.
The new guy. And seriously, when they do this, when they hire for this show, do they only find people whose last names I can't pronounce?
Well, you know, that's one of the criteria that we had in the application process, and so it weeds candidates out almost immediately.
With a name like Rezaian, I mean, I understand that they're not all easy, but I don't know.
Before we get
welcome
started.
Welcome to Bloomington.
Sure. Thank you. It's my duty to point out that there are a couple of ways that people can reach us while we're on the show today. If you'd like to get a question to Mayor Rezaian, feel free to give us a call. You can call 812-855-0811. You can also dial 877-285-9348. Don't worry. We'll repeat those as we move along in the program. You can also email us a question now or in fact, anytime to mayor@indiana.edu. The first thing I want to touch on today is the status of the Bloomington Hospital. The local council of women earlier this week said that the hospital may, in fact, merge with Clarion Health Partners. And I want to get your impressions as to if this is a wise choice on their part.
I don't feel qualified to know whether it's a wise choice. I mean, this is a business decision. It's an economics decision for the hospital board. I can't help but believe two things. One is that it will lessen local control. I mean, there's just no way that a company the size of an enterprise the size of Clarion comes in and doesn't have an intent that it's going to have a huge say. I understand there are some protections that are built in, but ultimately I think we'll find somewhere down the road that decisions that maybe could have been made locally in the past now aren't. And the second is, and while I understand that the case has been made that the merger and the move, a potential move of the hospital from near west side of town over to North Park, while the argument has been by some that the merger and the move are separate issues, I just simply see that that they're at minimum related, if not interlocked. I don't see how the move would have been empowered without the merger, and now that a merger has been approved, or I'm not sure it's legally approved yet, but it's moving forward on the merger has been approved, that doesn't help empower, certainly make it more likely that the move will occur. What we want to do as a city government is make sure that there's no obstacle in the way of the hospital expanding on site, which is what I believe needs to happen. The hospital is, and there are some restrictions that lend itself to being a landlocked facility, but we can work and we are working already within all of our zoning regulations and all of our maps and what properties are available and what properties are already owned by the hospital to find out what exactly the options are. Now, I'm assuming that there is a willing partner there that the hospital would expand on site if it's feasible, because the reason that they've given why they are looking at North Park is because they are landlocked and can't expand. So if we can point out you're not landlocked and you can expand, we're pretty comfortable that then they'll stay where they are and be able to expand on site.
Do you believe that Clarion Health Partners, which now has a controlling interest in the hospital's board per the terms of this agreement, mm-hmm. will listen to your concerns or the concerns of local government and perhaps be swayed in any way not to build a completely new state-of-the-art facility?
I don't mean to be flippant, but that's the question. And that's why the merger and the move are related, if not interlocked, certainly in my mind. I think if we were to take at face value the argument that the two issues are separate issues, this wouldn't even be a concern. But I think you've hit on exactly the issue. Will Clarion listen at all to local input? And two, isn't this a financial decision as well? I think that the loss of local control lends itself to a move, much more so than if we had total local control.
So I was thinking about the much has been made recently in the last few years of outsourcing jobs, and the governor has made a point of trying to insource jobs from Asia. And it seems to me this is sort of a hyper-local example of outsourcing control of the hospital to, you know, not to someone who's 5,000 miles away, but to someone who's about 50 miles away. Does that sort of outsourcing worry you?
Well, that's an interesting example. And of course, in this world of just the economy changing the way in which it is, and a hyper example is a great phrase. We're talking today that it's 50 miles away. In the world of healthcare and the world of business, I have no idea what other conglomerate or what larger interest might not gobble up something that's 50 miles away, and therefore we get caught in the wake. I guess I look at this also, and I've even been characterizing it in the few minutes we've been talking about it, as a move of the hospital. That's not the main – that's not the only concern. It is the main concern. It's not the only concern. The other concern is the ripple effect it has in the downtown, that all of those support services, ancillary services, many of the properties that are owned by the hospital itself or the medical community, the land and the number of people impacted the income, all of that probably, if you didn't count the hospital building itself, is in excess of what the hospital's financial impact is. It's that entire healthcare core in that part of town, and what it does for the community commerce, what it does for the character of the community, and thinking ahead, well, what will be there? I know someone's told me that who's a strong proponent of this, well, look at it as an opportunity. I do look at that building and wonder what would go there. Would it have to be torn down? Some people are talking about moving all social service agencies there. One, that assumes the social service agencies want to be under one roof. Two is, if they all move tomorrow, then what do you do with the other 95% of the building? There's an awful lot of questions. We've got many years, I think, to be working on this issue, but because I don't think they're going to move overnight. I don't think this is the Colts leaving Baltimore, to bring up a sore subject for some. But I do think plans have probably been in the works. I don't think you go out and buy 85, whatever number of acres in one part of town without some thought that someday you're going to use it.
You mentioned the ripple effect downtown, and if you'll pardon the bad pun, that moves us right into talking about the flood. A reminder that if you want to ask about the flood, 812-855-0811 or 877-285-9348 are our phone numbers. Do you think that the city and the county have thus far done enough to help the people who were most impacted by the flood?
Well, I think we're limited. I think the answer is yes in the immediate sense. I think and I don't mean that to be parsing words. I think the long term of this for those who are most seriously impacted is just now beginning or is about to begin. You've got health issues. You've got mold issues that are going to be inevitable. You've got long term structural problems. You've got insurance issues that some don't have and some will be working with. Some have and it probably won't cover. And the other is the financial impact and no pun intended at all, the ripple effect of all of the repair, the cost of just speaking as an executive of the city of Bloomington, just one entity that was impacted, our own property, our police headquarters, our fire department headquarters, some parks facilities, certainly streets. So we now have to be repaving. We've got to be repairing. We've got to be replacing computer equipment, other tangible capital that will have to be either repaired or replaced. That has an impact on what we won't be able to do because we're spending the money to repair or replace. That's going to be true of homeowners. I mean, that's going to be true of businesses. The lost income they've already experienced, the overtime that they're paying. And I guess the one message I really wanted to get out today, if I can, is that Friday, end of the day Friday, is the last day that you can report property damage, whether you're an individual homeowner or a business owner. And and that is to call the Monroe County Emergency Management Department at 349-2533 and report whatever loss that you've experienced. And that's why I say that we in the short term have been able to handle it, but ultimately it's bigger than all of us. It's bigger than even the state government, and that's why the states turn to the federal government. But you are dealing now with three layers of government if you're an individual, homeowner, business owner, working with local government to get your information submitted, counting on the state to act on that information once they receive it, and the federal government to send financial assistance back down. It's going to be time consuming. It's someone referred to it in the newspaper as a this is our own little Katrina, and for the one person impacted, it may as well have been Katrina. It's if your house or your business has been destroyed, everything's relative. It might not be in the scope or scale that that a Katrina was. But what I'm most nervous about with the analogy is that people forget that it's some other story will be the top story in a week or two, and there are going to be people and businesses still dealing with this.
You mentioned rebuilding and repaving. Have you gotten an estimate yet from city engineers or anyone like that on the cost? And if so, I wonder if you can give me some idea and give our listeners some idea of where the money will come from to pay for all of that.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask right now that someone back at City Hall text me because I know we got the final number supposed to be coming in today. We were waiting for utilities numbers, but we are going to be submitting all of our cost estimate, and I don't have it, so I'm hoping that by the time we're done talking about this, we will have it. In part, we'll be insured. In part, it's going to be coming out of pocket of the budgets of, for instance, Department of Public Works, that we have a paving budget. And my guess is we'll have repairs in excess of what we have in terms of available revenue. So we have two choices. One is we don't pave. We don't do as much of the new projects that we were planning to do this summer and into the fall. Or we go back to the city council and ask for an additional appropriation, which then comes from the general fund, which then won't be available for the 2009 budget. So again, to me, it's that ripple effect that we may not be seeing. We were, in terms of city government, very fortunate. The biggest expense will be, I'm guessing, will end up being the bridge culvert at North Dunn by Lake Griffey that likely will just be replaced as opposed to repaired. But I know the county, we had a meeting, County Commission President Pat Stover's called a meeting, I think it was on Monday, of all county officials who have been working on this and myself and our fire and police departments. And just listening to all that what they've got to deal with as well. And again, we didn't bear the brunt of this like surrounding counties. I can't imagine what the officials, businesses, people in homes are experiencing in those areas. So we'll get you a cost figure, I hope, here in just a few minutes. And it won't be that significant in terms of our overall budget, but it will be significant in terms of specific projects that probably will either be delayed or we'll have to go back to the council and have money to appropriate. And that's just city government. The county has got their issues to deal with, and as well as homeowners and business owners.
I was in Martinsville last week and talked to the governor and saw him interact with some of the people who had been impacted perhaps most severely by the flooding. And these people were just overcome with emotion. I saw one woman just put her arms around the governor because she didn't seem to have any other recourse. And I'm wondering, have you seen or heard or had people come up to you who were similarly emotionally impacted, to get away completely from finances for a second? Have these people who have approached you on the street or called your office had similar experiences?
Yes. And again, that's why I say that, you know, we don't – if you go to Martinsville, our police officers who went to Columbus to assist – came back, and I've not talked to them, but I've talked to Mike Dekoff, the chief, yesterday, in fact, again, and he talked about how they were impacted by this. I mean, they see an awful lot, but they went out, saw it, and wanted to make it clear they felt like they did not want to be reimbursed for that time. They wanted to be volunteering to have done that. And that spoke volumes to me that I don't think they expected to see what they saw. I've heard yesterday, I know the Martinsville mayor is just sort of at wit's end in terms of trying to, you know, all of us, think of any time in your daily life that you start to think, oh, you're overwhelmed with whatever you have to do just on that day's to-do list. And then something completely unexpected comes and becomes the number one on that list. The list doesn't diminish. You still got to deal with all the other responsibilities you have. And so when I walked around just as the storm was ending, in both on 17th Street by 17th and Monroe, and then went over to Kirkwood, then 4th Street, and then later down College Mall Road, and just to. It was such an interesting thing, especially when I went up and down Kirkwood, where the business owners, the owners of Greetings, who've been through flooding, been through fire, and then have been through this one again, kind of a flash flood. And that kind of – and I know it somewhat seems a little bit dramatic, but that spirit of, look, you know, we've been through things. We're going to get through this thing too. But just going up and down that block, people worried about their employees – and how we're going to keep them employed. Talking with the owner of Winter Associates on 17th Street and coincidentally, my next door neighbors who own the chiropractic business right there as well. Suddenly you're faced with – I mean, think about whenever you've moved, how much goes into moving. But you're planning for that. These are people who are moving who had no – intention of moving, and then seeing their possessions, not just in dollars and cents, which, you know, is important, but also the emotion of it. Some people who have responsibility for records of other people or have clients who are counting on them. So there is definitely the business sense of it, but also you can just see the emotional toll it takes because they it's such an amazing thing to see that they feel they might be letting somebody down, employees, customers, clients. That it's something I hadn't expected out of it. I just – obviously the dollars and cents is such a key thing. You just – that's the way you start thinking. But they've got an awful lot to consider.
We're talking with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan on Ask the Mayor. You can get in on the conversation. Call us. 812-855-0811 is one phone number. The other is 877-285-9348. Feel free to email us as well. The email address, mayor@indiana.edu.
Can I mention one more thing on that, if you have
for
a second?
Sure. Absolutely.
The other aspect to it, in terms of for mayors, and we want everyone, the Martinsville, Columbus, all the people in Owen County, everybody to know how much we're thinking of them and have in many cases been able to provide assistance as are other communities. But all those communities that have been impacted, I know what those mayors are thinking. In addition to what they're facing with the immediate problem is that ripple effect again. House Bill 1001 was the property tax reform bill. It is going to restrict the revenues that these mayors, who I know just as I am now, are going through their budget preparation. Now, Bloomington and Monroe County are in pretty decent shape. I'd say good shape in terms of the impact of that bill. But that law has taken effect, and other communities, and Martinsville is one, where the impact is going to be a lot more severe on their ability to raise revenue. And to be trying to prepare your budget, knowing you're already facing a shortfall, and then to have this and it is not an exaggeration to say devastation in those communities. That's a challenge that the legislature needs to be aware is a problem. In addition to the problem that House Bill 1001 was already going to be, that the ability of local government to finance the needs of a community is something that was already an issue and now I think has just become – I'll use your kind of – steal of the phrase here – a hyper issue that needs to be dealt with pretty quickly.
You were on hand yesterday when Jill Long Thompson and Denny Oxley came to town, trumpeting their campaign and their newfound partnership. What do you think of their chances against Mitch Daniels and Becky Skillman come November?
Here's what an awful lot of people will be saying, I think, in terms of observers of the whole process, is that the the governor and his campaign, and you may know the number, it's somewhere, I believe, in excess of $5 million is what I want to say on hand. It's in the millions that they have on hand in their campaign. I'm not sure about the figure, but it's very high. The number that the Thompson-Oxley campaign have probably is 10 times less. It's probably not an exaggeration to say it's 10 times different. You've got an incumbent and who I think has done what he has set out to do. Whether I've agreed with it or not, I think he's done what he's set out to do. And so I credit anybody who's able to do that in the world of the legislature or the world of politics. Some of it's been at his own popularity's expense. I mean, there are places in the state that are bitter about daylight savings time. There are places in the state that are bitter about the toll road being leased. There are people upset about a lot of things, or people are supportive of a lot of the things. I think people should not ever count out somebody because of the campaign finance issues. And I think we'll start to see more of these stories about how she's not able to raise anywhere near the kind of money that he's able to raise, that the campaign isn't on television as much. But you look just to the last Indianapolis mayor's race and you look at what's happening nationally, I'm not sure that either candidate, and this is worth the price you're paying for this observation, I'm not sure either candidate is in control of her or his own destiny. You've got – obviously, they've got to do their job in campaigning, but with the interest in the national race, I think there are an awful lot of people who went to vote this past primary in May. These are people who are declaring themselves to be of one party or the other in order to vote, so they have an interest. And I think that some of them thought, oh, yeah, there's a governor's race in the Democrat side. They went out to vote for Clinton or Obama, and the governor's race just didn't get through. And I'm not so sure that won't happen again in November, that the race will be the presidential race, some local races that will generate attention. But I don't know that either candidate can predict, and I don't think anybody predicted, that, for instance, that Greg Ballard, who was outspent by a 5-to-1 at minimum, would ever have a chance. And I'm not sure that you can say he won that election as much as the circumstances dictated that the sitting mayor was going to lose because of all the circumstances with tax.
Well, I was
going
to get to that. Is that the major reason that Greg Ballard, in many minds, was carried to victory was that the property tax decisions that were made leading up to the election just irked so many people. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the governor has a property tax proposal on the plate right now. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that a similar circumstance is possible statewide if people don't like the cap that the governor is proposing in the property taxes?
I think that, and then you've got the sales tax that did go up 1%. People are upset about gas taxes. And again, I don't know that it will be just it was in a vacuum up in Marion County. I mean, that was the property tax revolt, essentially, that occurred there was the issue that came up for that race. I don't know that it'll be the isolated issue. I think you've got that, people love to talk about the perfect storm in politics. You've got a lot of people upset about a lot of issues geographically, as I said, daylight savings time, toll road, whatever it might be. You've got the tax issues, property taxes, the sales tax having gone up. And you've got a national race that, while Indiana, is always predicted to be declared a red state at 6:01 p.m. on election night, I don't think that's going to be the case this year. And I think you'll see that the Obama campaign will have people, staff here in Indiana, and especially Northwest Indiana, Southwestern Indiana, and in Indianapolis. And that won't make it. I think you're going to see a lot of interest in that presidential race that combined with people who are disheartened by what's been happening within the state, combined with economic times and gas prices, could overwhelm both campaigns. And really not – it may not be about who you're for governor. It could be about what you're upset about, not about the two people who are running. And then you've got the Libertarian candidate, and now we see the very conservative – and I think extremely so, John Waterman, state senator, who is apparently working with the anti-choice campaigns and all to activate his own gubernatorial campaign. And that certainly will have an impact as well.
You mentioned you thought that Governor Daniels had set out to do a number of different some would say perhaps politically suicidal initiatives during his time. And you say you believe he's accomplished a good number of them.
I do.
Ms. Candidate Thompson doesn't agree with that. I mean both she and Representative Oxley said yesterday that they believe that the government is more broken now under 4 years of Mitch Daniels and Becky Skillman than it was 4 years ago when in fact that was the change message that carried them into office was we need to have more fiscal responsibility and things like that. Do you believe that those two ideas are in fact at odds?
The two ideas of her opinion, my opinion?
Yes.
Well, I think I don't think that the opinions will be different when it comes to he set out to – and again, I'm not saying I would agree with the issue all the time. I'm saying is he set out to do something and did it. He set out to lease those toll roads. Now, I think it's a bad idea and I think it's bad for the state in the long term. I think it's instant gratification to get a lot of money in early and then you've turned over – I mean it's an amazing concept, not – just in Indiana, it's elsewhere, where you've got ownership and by though investors in other countries who essentially are running our toll roads for the short term gain of getting capital up front. So he set out to do it and did it. He set out to do daylight savings time. That's something my 16 years in the legislature, I watched many people, including myself, have debated and talked about, and it never went anywhere. It came close, but it didn't pass. In his first years of the year or years of office, that is his law, and it cost. It cost control of the House. The House went from Republican to Democrat, I believe, in large part, if not in total, because of that issue. So he set out to do that, and did it. He set out to put, to privatize some of the boards of trustees of universities. Now, I disagree with most of the appointments that he put on there. I think their interest is in running a university like a business, and it to me should be treated more sensitively. But he set out to do it and has done it. So
I want to get in one quick phone call. Steve is on the line. Steve, thanks for calling in to Ask the Mayor.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a couple of comments about water.
Mm-hmm.
One, of course, is the flood. And I just want to point out that, you know, these natural phenomena are unpredictable. But there is one factor that made the flooding worse, and that's the amount of impervious surface that we have in the city. And the large majority of that is for automobile infrastructure, streets and parking lots. In fact, we have more surface area dedicated to automobiles than to people, and it would be nice if we could, you know, not have so much pavement everywhere. My other comment is about the water supply. Just think if we had been able to collect all that rain during the flood and save it. You know, there's an issue with our future water supply, and I agree that it's essential to guarantee that for the sustainability of the city. But I would like to see more conservation measures, not just a new pipeline, things like drought-tolerant plants, rain barrels. I have one at my house. And maybe the city could have large cisterns to collect rain.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate your call. Mr. Mayor, we've got just a few seconds left. I think Steve's concern about the rainwater is valid, and I think the city has done a reasonably good job with the flooding. But thank you for your time today. We appreciate having you on.
Thank you all.
We'll see you next month.
Thank you very much, Stan.